We now join the following program already in progress.
Speaking of, have you guys played Fortnite?
I played it before it came out. Does that count?
How'd you play it before it came out?
So I worked on that cool games.
Oh, really?
They're working on that.
Been around that long?
Yeah, it was under development 2014.
Was it called Fortnite, or did it have a different name?
Yeah, it was Fortnite.
Yeah, the game's gone through some changes, though.
Because Bob and I talked about it on the other show.
I mean, you build crap out of crap, tear stuff down to build more stuff.
Is it like Minecraft meets Call of Duty with dancing?
Meets Left 4 Dead meets... They, like, throw all these different game types in. Like, it's sort of an amalgamation of a lot of stuff. They're trying to, like, hit all the popular notes.
Well, Battle Royale, because all kind of stuff. There's some, like, semi-teenagers that live down the street from Bob's house. Whoa. Super windy. And so his kids are all about Fortnite and doing the dance and listen to the... Mm-hmm. The theme song, but I don't think they've ever played it. And then Deacon was over there, and he's catching the rage. And again, none of them have ever played the game. And he's like, "Dad, we got downloaded. It's free." I'm like, "No, we're not downloading Fortnite." I was like, "It's all about killing people." And then I stopped myself, and I'm like, "You know what? I don't really know anything about this game, so I don't want to be a hypocrite. I want to be legit with you."
You can play like non-PvP, like not against players. So you can have you basically fight against little zombie creatures. So the default game type when they first started developing it,
does it look like a zombie creature, or does it look like a person?
Okay. No, they're like all mutated and stuff.
It's really cartoony, though.
Yeah,
very cartoon based graphics. I won't let Mark play.
Why?
I don't like the culture around the game. I don't like the comic mischief in the game. I don't think there's much of a point.
Okay,
I'd rather him play Minecraft or, you know, the other 200 games that we have here. And he has a Switch now, so he doesn't need to.
I think you can get it for the Switch.
You can. It's free on the Switch.
Because Bob and I talked about it, and I think he and I are going to, like, play it one day.
Mm-hmm.
Or one evening, just to see what it's about.
I mean, I don't think it's inherently bad. I just don't like the culture around it.
Mm. That, like, douchiness that people are having?
You don't have to play the online part of it. You can have, like...
Yeah. Just my personal preference, my prejudice against it.
I don't know, I have a thing about it desensitizing people to the effects of death, and then inherently like treating people like they're lessers, or like they're less than people, or that they don't have value.
See, it's tough. It's tough to have that conversation in a game like that, because a death doesn't really feel like a death, I don't think. And Wes, you can kind of correct me if I'm wrong. Compare that to like Call of Duty, because you've played Call of Duty before. I think there's a bigger weight to Call of Duty because you're...
Oh, it's humans, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, you're more... It's obvious that it's humans, killing other humans. Okay. You know, even if you want to give it a bigger purpose, like these guys are on a mission, they have something to do, they're trying to help people. Mm-hmm. But it's still, that weight of killing somebody, I think, is a little bit heavier than a comic mischief game like Fortnite.
Okay.
So there's two elements. There's like the fighting people element, and then there's the building element.
Yeah,
so that's where it's most similar to Minecraft.
Compute.
So basically, there's a bunch of buildings and like cars and stuff in this world, and you like just like Minecraft, you hit it and it breaks apart into base resources that you use to build parts of your base, and you can build your base and upgrade it and stuff like that. And they have a creative only mode where you don't have to have other people come in there. It can be just local, and you just build stuff. And
but can you still do that, like on a server with other people? Like, can my kids and Bob's kids like build stuff or whatever together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
Hmm.
But then the flip side is the main thing in that game is what's called Battle Royale, which is kind of like an every man for themselves, and you try to be the last man standing.
Yeah. So I guess you like fly in on a bus, and then you jump out of the bus.
Yep.
And then you're fighting. You have nothing, and you have to find stuff, and then you kill it. And then, like, the game starts to shrink, and so the people are forced to... I think that was...
That's clever.
That's a kind of cool idea, yeah.
On one hand, it is. And if it wasn't for the culture that I keep mentioning, I might have actually tested it out.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's a hard spot in my heart for people treating other people like they're not people, and they can just walk around and kill them, or like it's funny to kill them, and then you dance and like make stupid things because you killed someone or you shot them in the face. Like that bugs me.
Well, I'm curious though. So, you know, I hope that you and Bob do test it out and let me know what your final thought is on it. I'm curious now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've actually talked about that at some point too, haven't we? About how we decide what we let our kids do and not do and kind of our justifications for that. I wonder if it might be worth revisiting sometime.
Maybe, but I think like during that conversation, I was making a lot of really huge assumptions about something I had no experience, and I had to stop myself from just making these sweeping parental decisions out of ignorance.
Well, you know what? Let me ask you an honest question, though. You've let your Deacon watch most of the Marvel movies, right?
Yeah.
How do you differentiate between that and the video game, where there's, you know, violence in both?
I don't know. I see maybe the Marvel movies or superhero movies. Honestly, I didn't give those movies very much thought. In some of the violence in it, like there are points in it where I would cringe. But I think that if it is violence depicted in those kind of movies, it is justified, or it's cartoony, or they're shooting laser beams or things like that. And I guess it goes back to that game where I don't know a whole lot about it. But like, I don't want him to know the name of certain types of guns. He's like, oh, go get the rocket launcher, or go get the this, and go get the whatever, and go shoot that person in the face. Like, and I thought about the same thing. I'm like, well, they're doing that when they're playing laser tag or when they're playing Nerf guns. Like, but maybe it's like you talk about the culture, like people in a chat room, like screaming and obscenities and like being so obsessed with this game that they friggin' lose their mind and wanting to kill people and can like be all silly when you kill people.
Do you think there's a difference in with movies? It's passive because you're observing, but in video games, you're active. You're the actual one perpetrating.
Yeah, I was going to say that originally about the passive part, but I didn't think that was a strong enough justification.
No, I think it's, I don't know if I can say either way, but I think it's interesting enough to state, you know, and because similar reasons, I kept Mark away from all the Marvel movies for a long time. He just started watching them a couple of months ago. He still hasn't seen most of them. I wanted him to be old enough to understand the gravity of some of the situations and have a bigger appreciation for death. You know, like he's reading the Harry Potter books right now, and there's some major deaths in that book. And I give it credit because they don't underplay them. Yeah. And I know that he'll read a part and I'll talk to him about it. And he's broken down in tears several times. And we sat down and had a good conversation about death and different things like that. In the Marvel movies, it's a little bit different because deaths don't happen the same way. But, you know, in video games, yeah, there's that active participant part that is a little bit hypocritical, I think.
Well, I think you raised a really good point about it being part of a greater story, about violence being justified as part of the world that you're kind of immersed in.
Yeah, or we talked about war being horrible.
Yeah. And even in the Marvel situation, like if someone died, there's context, there's story, there's lead up, there's remorse, there's feelings and narrative and an entire reasoning behind that, as to where if you're playing a video game and you kill people to get points over and over and over again, you don't learn to value that person. Yeah, exactly. You don't learn to cope or understand why that person died or the feelings that you should sort of harbor after that happens, because you're just like, oh, I'll go do it again. I'll go shoot that person. I'll go shoot that person. And I'm not in any position to say that, like, that is the reason why people do school shootings. Like, I don't believe any of that crap. But I do believe from personal experience that you do start to devalue that analog. Like, if that person,
right,
it represents something. And if it's something like Splatoons or whatever, you're like shooting ink and you're just like making that person messy.
Right.
Whereas, and again, I don't know anything about the game, so this is all just kind of blowing smoke. But using Call of Duty, like, we would go out on a legit mission where I would shoot at people, or I would shoot people's cars or land on their house and then go play a video game where I did the exact same thing. Like Call of Duty 2, I think it was Modern Warfare 2, has this scene where you're flying through a neighborhood in a Blackhawk and you're shooting stuff from a Blackhawk. And I'm like, holy crap, this is funny. Like, we just did this today. And it does start to desensitize a little bit because those people spoke in the actual, like they spoke Arabic in that game. And you started to have that us against them, and you dehumanize that group of people to a point where you're rewarded for killing them. I thought it was a little admirable that you would randomly play for the bad guys, because it would take people out of that thing. Go, oh, okay, well, now right. I'm fighting against the thing that I'm supposed to care so much about. Like, but I never. I always thought it was boring, like the big, huge matches I thought was boring. But I don't know, he's 8. And it may not even compute.
Yeah.
But then it may plant some seed. And so I don't know. There's so many unknowns about doing this that there's something about it that doesn't feel right.
I'm going to stream, but we can start whenever he gets in here, like officially start.
Okay.
And I'm hypocritical too, because I won't let Mark play Fortnite or a lot of those other games, but I'll let him sit and watch me play Overwatch.
See, I know nothing about Overwatch. I saw Overwatch Legos, and I have no idea what that is. I've never played.
I bought some of the sets. I love them. But Overwatch is another first-person shooter. It's team-based, where you have to work together to achieve an objective. And you shoot each other. It's comic mischief in a way, too, although the weapons are a little bit more... they're not real, but they're just as violent.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I like that it doesn't have is you don't see blood. You know, you don't see characters blow apart. You know, you get killed, and it's over, and then you start over, you come back into the match. The fact that you were essentially killed is glossed over because it is, you know, it's capture the flag or escorting something or something else.
Yeah, there's something weird about that, like that respawning type thing where you just like get hit and you just kind of go away, and then you're just like, you come back like that.
Yeah. The only thing I try to emphasize in any kind of way is like, okay, I'm not dead. I was beat, or, you know, health was gone, or
yeah,
it's not even a really good justification, but I'm just trying to change the language a little bit.
Right. Trying to add like a disconnect.
Yeah. Because death is like the weightiest of subjects. And it's something that a lot of people don't face regularly enough to be able to understand or cope with it if it happens again, or to be able to sit down and prepare somebody for when it actually happens. And so if your only experience with death is what you see in silly video games, and then you have to experience it in real life, like, not saying people should be prepared for other people dying, but like, there's a massive disconnect. And I mean, I'm in the video game culture. Like, we were the kids who grew up on video games, and then actually going to war and seeing people, like, not just on some philosophical level, but like, oh, the drone pilots are, they treat it like a video game, and there's this moral disconnect. Like, there's just as much of a moral disconnect for the people that are actually standing in that desert. And so it's weird. And that's the thing that I've experienced firsthand. And it wasn't because of video games, but I don't want video games that early to start that conversation. Like, I want the conversation about other people from other places that think differently. Like, they are still people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just some thing that you can like laugh about and shoot and kill and go off. And so I don't know how to start that. And I don't know if preventing someone from playing a silly video game that I've never played hits that point home.
I think that that's where the parenting comes in, though. I think that's where us, probably even more so than before, is just having that conversation. You know, if you look at old Nintendo games, you know, Link dies and you might have an extra life, but the situation doesn't feel as weighty as it does now with more modern games.
Right, because he spins around, plays a little weird song, like, and then you respawn.
You don't really identify don't have that a as a person. Meter. Yeah.
Right.
But I think people do have a little bit more of an emotional investment in characters now, too. I mean, you think about playing Breath of the Wild or Mario Odyssey. There's a little bit more frustration involved, but I don't know if we sit down and think about, oh, man, my character just died.
I mean, I used that term over and over again when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. It was specific to that video game. It was never connected with people actually dying. I think the first person that I like intimately knew that died I was in my 20s. I never knew anybody that died. And so, like, to be able to say, like, oh, my guy died, like, it, those two things, although they were the same word, were definitely not the same emotional or intellectual attachment or connection. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing or something that should be corrected or prevented. But, and then we talked about, like, you talked about the culture and, like, people on headsets screaming obscenities from across the country. I'm like, well, even if he was allowed to play, it would be in, like, you don't get a headset. that's not a thing that you get. You sit here in silence.
And that's not exclusive to Fortnite, to be fair. That's
true.
Kind of online gaming in a nutshell.
Hands down. Because Deke likes to watch, like, video game walkthroughs of games that he can't play. So my YouTube subscription, my homepage, is like two videos that I like and then like 50 Paper Mario hour and a half long gameplay. And he was in there watching one day, and you can hear this guy, and this guy was like, damn it, man. I'm like, nope. So if he watches them, he has to watch them with the sound off because there's really no benefit.
There's no filter.
Yeah. And yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. There's no benefit. Right.
It doesn't do you any good to listen to background sounds or some chump playing it in the background. So he's like, yeah, I don't want to hear the words. He's like, I just want to watch the game. And I know he's not trying to swindle me or like get around or anything. Like, he's super honest about it and he just wants to enjoy this game. But I think this is the first time where his video game experience goes beyond like Mario style problem solving or let's walk through the adventure, you know, Link kind of stuff and fight the big silly monsters to I want to play the game. According to my super shallow understanding, like, now it's time for me to play the game where I shoot my friends in the face with these rifles. I'm like, ooh.
Let me show you Mortal Kombat where I rip his spine out and dangle it over his decapitated. I mean, it's definitely not a new concept. I mean, when Mortal Kombat hit the scene, like, it just wrecked all people's like expectations and ideas of what games were. It like brought them from kiddie to way past kiddie.
My parents for better hated or for worse, Mortal Kombat, and I loved it.
That's interesting. I want to talk to my dad and see if he had any of these same thoughts or whether or not he knew or cared.
I mean, they had congressional hearings over mm-hmm. this stuff. Yeah.
You know what I think is really interesting is a lot of the gameplay and footage from Mortal Kombat 11 just got released. That's coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm watching it, and it actually made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I actually didn't like how far it's gone. And I'm like, man, am I getting old, or are we really hitting
a limit? I haven't watched it. How much further is it than the Mortal Kombat 1?
From 1?
My God.
Dude.
Well, Mortal Kombat 10 was actually pretty bad. 11, I think, is even worse.
Well, give it the description of 1.
It's like every move is a finishing move. And then the finishing moves... Okay, so the one I saw was Raiden and Scorpion. And Scorpion has like this knife/sword kind of thing. And they're fighting, like stabbing, and there's blood, just like it normally is. But you get a lot closer. The graphics are way better.
Almost like an X-ray view of the bones breaking.
Okay, yeah. I remember when they introduced that a couple of versions ago, like the ribs cracking and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I didn't remember it seeing like that weird like X-ray style, like some of the UFC type games where it like goes inside their body and shows the damage. But it was the fighting is really kind of flawless. Like it looks really good.
Yeah.
And every one of those moves is like, oh, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead. And they just keep kind of coming back. And then Scorpion did this one final move where he was dead, and then he came back to life and then, like, caught on fire and flew through Raiden, and only his vertebrae were left. And then he chopped his head off, and it flew around. And I mean, it's what Mortal Kombat set out to do in the 90s and then ramped up 11 times.
I mean, it is a little bit ridiculous on one end, but it's really grotesque. The one that I saw yesterday that kind of made me feel a little bit uneasy, character grabs the other character as part of the finishing move, goes, runs really fast, drags him on the ground, his face is on the ground, and the flesh and everything is just peeling away, and the eyeballs coming out.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I understand freedom of expression, and people kind of like the grotesque nature of some things, but I think it was a little bit much for me.
I got a little bit of a shock when I started working for Epic, because I got hired on to work on Gears of War 3, and I'd actually never played a Gears of War game before that, the first two. And so I wasn't really... I knew some general concepts of the game, but I wasn't really prepared for... They have equivalents of finishing moves in that game, too. So if you knock a guy on the ground, you can go up to him, and depending upon what weapon you have, you can do, like, an execution. So they're, like, specialized on for different weapons. So if you pick up a shotgun, it does a different animation and a different way to kill him than if you had, let's say, like, a rocket launcher or a pistol and all these different things. So part of the game, it encourages you to, like, explore, kind of like Mortal Kombat. Like, they wanted you to explore playing with a different character or playing with a different weapon to get like a different animation of something gruesome, you know, happening as like a reward. And so, yeah, when they he revs up his chainsaw and like buries it in it, the chest of a corpse on the ground and just like flailing everywhere, I was kind of shocked, actually. And this is coming from a guy who played, you know, Mortal Kombat growing up and, you know, Street Fighter and all those sorts of things. But yeah, they took it to another level too. It's not like as famous as Mortal Kombat as far as that, but yeah, it's pretty gruesome. Like there's decapitations in it. There's one where there's like a type of weapon has like a critter inside of it. It's like an alien gun, and they shoot it, and the critter like lobs out of the gun and goes underground and burrows under the ground and makes like a beeline according to like the line of sight you just aimed down. And it, when it goes a certain distance, it pops out of the ground and either detonates beside them and like decapitates them, kind of like a claymore or something.
Mm.
Or if you launch it and instead of letting it hit the ground, you launch it and it lobs into a person's chest, it'll like burrow into their chest as they're like flailing around, and you can see it like come out their back and stuff. So it's sort of like an Aliens reference, like in reverse of the alien coming out. It's like trying to go in. So they're very creative with their their execution moves there too. And I definitely wouldn't want Samantha and Grant to see this, because I was sort of shocked at, as like a 30-something-year-old, never seeing those before, and being pretty, you know, watching all Robocops and everything growing up, and I was just kind of shocked at the level. Well, then I had to watch it every day, right? Because I had to make sure those executions worked as part of my job, and we had to like toggle on all the gore settings. We had to toggle off the gore settings. That was actually kind of interesting. When we shipped it to Japan, different countries had different requirements according to where it went. So in Japan, you couldn't decapitate somebody. So we had to make sure that if there was any animation in the game that normally would trigger a decapitation, you have to make sure that doesn't happen. So you're like trying to, it's kind of interesting to think about. And there's different rules and stuff, but yeah, it was crazy.
Did you guys grow up playing Doom at all? Doom or Wolfenstein?
Play Wolfenstein.
Because I think that those were the first violent games I'd ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I think that was, you know, really interesting as a marker of games being more adult. Other than like the, you know, the Leisure Suit Larry ones, or just a completely different direction.
Oh yeah,
that's chapter two of this conversation. But no, I just thought about Wolfenstein, and I'm like, well, yeah, you walk around in the Nazis, and then you shoot your little Luger, and then they do a kind of backflip where blood shoots out.
And you shoot dogs, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so part of me went, well, I played that after I played Duck Hunt, and it sort of became like an accuracy thing more than I shot a person. Like, I just wanted to be accurate with this thing that I was doing. And that's where those like stand-up arcade games, like Police Enforcer or Lethal Enforcer or the Police Academy, whatever kind of gun. I like those because it's being accurate. It's exercising some type of skill. And I thought back, I'm like, was Duck Hunt my gateway drug?
A lot of people say that's the original first-person shooter.
Yeah, like... It was weird. That's the first time I drew that weird kind of connection. Like, Wolfenstein came after Duck Hunt. And then from Wolfenstein came, you know, every Call of Duty type game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it went like Doom and then Duke Nukem.
Unreal Tournament and all those.
Yeah, half a dozen others, yeah.
But ironically, I was not allowed to play with guns as a kid. Like, my dad was in the Air Force. My dad was a good old boy from West Virginia that hunted most of his life join the military. And then my brother and I were not, like, we didn't have Nerf guns, just something we just didn't have. We weren't allowed to play with, like, toy guns. I had never shot a gun until I went to basic training and found out I was really good at it. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. Like, maybe again it was the duck hunt that helped, because I don't really know what I'm doing. But I'm really good at it.
Yeah, my friend Travis, my buddy in Wyoming that I mentioned a couple times that I went out to see recently, if I recall the story correctly, like, they're, you know, living in Montana, they're a big, like, outdoorsy hunting kind of family. And I believe him and his brother, he has two other brothers, he's the oldest, and I believe his dad's rule was he had, like, squirt guns and other things up to a certain point, and toy guns and everything to play cowboys and Indians or whatever. And at the certain point where the kid decided they wanted, like, a BB gun, that was the point where the dad sat him down and, like, had a talk, like, okay, this is where you're transitioning from pretend to real. And from that point on, they weren't allowed to play with toy guns. Like, they made that active switch in their mind to go, these are not toys. These are from now on weapons, and you're not allowed to play with them in any manner that is related to how you used to play with them. So they kind of got rid of all, you know, the ability to play with toy guns before, you know, after that. So it's kind of an interesting way to make a learning experience and a lesson out of it. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, maybe that goes back to, I think, our point. Really agree. I agree with that. I think that's a really good practice. But video games blur that line so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Because not only are you still making it a silly, fun game, like, you're encouraged to do the thing that every responsible gun owner or firearms instructor teaches you not to do. Like, you don't point that thing at anything, you know, that you don't intend to kill. And the video game's like, oh, well, you can just be haphazard and just spray and pray and run around and be silly and kill a thing.
Do you think it makes a difference? And I don't have an opinion on this because I'm not well versed to actually really answer this, why I'm asking. The fact that you're using a mouse or a keyboard or a controller when you're doing it, that kind of disconnect, do you think that matters, or does it not matter at all?
Versus having, like, a zapper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel connected to a gun. I'm using my mouse to point, which isn't even the same motion as you would do. Like, playing Nerf is more direct than using a mouse. But that's in my mind as somebody who doesn't have a lot of experience with guns. So I don't know.
Okay. I'll give a semi-ignorant opinion on this.
Okay.
As someone who has both played video games and shot lots of guns, that I would think for some people, or for some, I would especially say young people, in the game, if you have to level up to a certain type of weapon, you start to idolize that type of weapon because it's a prize to attain. It's something you're working toward. Like, I finally unlocked the Uzi or the M16 or whatever. And the moment that the moment that you would actually be able to hold that real one in your hand, it could be like a very cathartic moment for them. Like, here's this thing I've only ever seen in a digital world that you've tried to grasp at and work toward. You would potentially start to covet or want to have the real manifestation. And so some people, I mean, because guns are surprisingly heavy for people that don't know any better. It feels cool in your hand. Like, I mean, it's the same reason people like playing Nerf guns. Like, it gives you this weird feeling when you're holding a gun. And I think for someone who is playing a video game for an extended period of time and have only idolized this thing in two dimensions, it could have a really weird psychological effect on them. Either it could be the completion of, like, I finally get to hold the thing. Or it could be like, oh, it makes them feel uneasy or uncomfortable depending on their social situation or their upbringing. I don't know, but that's a very interesting thought. Maybe it's like swords. Like, I have no reason to have a sword. I see swords in movies. I see swords in video games. And if I ever go to someone's house and they just happen to have some display of swords, I'm like, I kind of want to touch that sword. And when you get that sword, like, I'm Highlander now. and you want to play with the actual sword.
Dude, and I had a pair of size growing up, like Raphael. Right. Yeah. And I learned how to spin him around and like do like deflections and stuff. We would like spar with a buddy of mine, had like a bow staff or something, like Napoleon Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And we would sit there and like I would spin around and block attacks and everything. You definitely feel more connected to the character if you can more emulate them. And I mean, that was my favorite Ninja Turtle, so I knew lots of kids that had nunchucks, and you know, eventually they'll learn that they smack themselves in the nads and they don't want to play with nunchucks anymore, unless they, you know. So there's,
and I definitely think that's like the, one of the major reasons to why, you know, kids find their dad's gun or their grandpa's gun or whatever, and they start to play with it and they end up shooting themselves. Mm-hmm. Because of that same kind of, like, they idolize this thing that they see in games and in video games. Not that they're out to do any harm. Not that they have malicious intent. It just, like you're saying about your friend, it is still in the toy world. And they have not been educated properly or experienced properly to understand that it is not a toy in any way. But then you can just turn around and reiterate in video games that it is meant to be a toy. Over and over again.
So in the I don't know if the same thing happened in your guys' areas, but here in the early 2000s, the paintball industry took off, was absolutely huge.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that industry is a little bit strange, right? Because people wanted to kind of experience, you know, playing with guns and being able to shoot other people without any of the real real harm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a video game, but it's this weird fantasy and emulation of playing with weapons. And I'm wondering if, you know, that also isn't as, you know, has its negative effects to
it. Negative, or is it more so because it's as close as you can get without the penalty?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the airsoft community.
Yes.
But those when I was in Belgium, really good replicas. I was introduced to airsoft, like, battles, like these massive, like 20-on-20 sanctioned kind of things. And I was in the army and I was in a foreign country and I went with my Belgian friend and I'm looking around and I'm like, who are these guys? Like, that guy is dressed like a soldier. Like, he has all of the same gear that I was issued when I deployed. That guy is dressed like a British soldier. That guy is dressed like a Russian, or that guy's a special operator flat out. This guy's beard, he's got his Velcro, got his dip, the whole deal. The guns that they had felt heavy, like the metallic weight, the mass, everything felt real. You could load butane in the bottom of the pistols, and so whenever you would shoot the little pellets, it would like rack back like your gun was cocking. They call it blowback. And I was floored out of my mind. And I'm like, are these guys like America? They're like, oh no, these are Belgians. That guy's like 17. He bought all that stuff on eBay. And I was just, it was blown away. I have an airsoft gun in my garage right now that looks like an actual gun. It feels like an actual gun. If someone were to step up on me when I was out in my garage, I would pick that thing up. And I would take me a second to realize that it wasn't real. And it's tactics. Like, it's exercising people wanting to go out and play guns in the woods. And it's less about killing, because you're getting hit with this little plastic that freaking hurts, but like, you raise your hand and you walk off, and then some medic has to go and hang out with you for a couple minutes, and then you kind of respawn. So it's less about the death and more about the mechanics, and they replay like battle scenes and stuff. But yeah, I was seriously taken back. I took a picture of one of the kids and I took it to work. And around all these like senior, like enlisted guys and officers. And I was like, this dude in this picture has a horrible uniform infraction. I want to see if you guys can find it. And they're looking at this guy and they're like, oh, screw. Like, well, that little thing is a little crooked. And I don't know, man, like his bootlace, it could be tucked in a little bit more. I'm like, that kid is a 15-year-old Belgian guy that bought all that stuff on the internet. They're like, what? Yeah. So it's, they're still playing. So I don't know. It's, I don't know. Hi, Donovan.
Hi.
How's that Windows computer treating you? Pretty good, huh?
Oh, it's terrible. That took forever.
Have you been listening in on the live chat? Have you been?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been following along with everything.
Do you have anything to chime in?
Without backtracking?
You can track back, forward, up, down,
yeah, go for it.
Oh, I don't know. It's kind of, listening to you guys talk, it's kind of weird because I am at a point where I can play those uber violent games. Not saying that I do, but you guys were talking about like Fortnite. It's like I really enjoy Fortnite, and Fortnite is one of those games. It's like I play with my son because it's more. I'm not quite sure how to describe it. It's not the act of like shooting people in the face. I think that that makes Fortnite what it is. It's the fact that it's competition, like it's a competitive thing, like a sport. You know, you're out competing against 100 other people to try and see who can last the longest, rather than just killing for killing's sake. If that makes sense. I'm not sure if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
No, it does. I think that we're talking more just because of the impact on kids and not being able to differentiate between, you know, this mimicking killing somebody else. I think that's what it kind of started with, Josh, right?
First off, okay, so you are a Fortnite player, so now we have someone on the inside. So we can stop waxing, maybe hypothetical. I know, Wes, you
and were, Overwatch.
I was so much on the inside. I don't want to play it anymore.
it was cool. Wes knew it before it was cool.
I did.
So, does it like? Are you? I don't know. Do you use real guns, or are they like made up silly blasters in this game?
They're kind of real guns. Yes, they're real guns, but they're cartoonized in a way that. You can tell that they're a gun, but they don't look like any specific gun that you would find in the real world, except maybe like a Desert Eagle that's the size of your head, or a shotgun that looks like, you know, three BFGs stacked on top of each other. Or the new weapons they have are, you know, they have like firework rocket launchers. And I mean, they're real guns, but like I said, cartoonized in a way that kind of takes the gravity out of the fact that you're using a gun, like you would say, the gravity of it.
So if you had an arsenal of weapons, would there be like a real world analog? Could you point to the thing on a shelf or at like a sporting goods store? And go like, that's the gun from Fortnite, or are they so disassociated from actual weapons?
No, you'd have to go to like cosplay or Halloween store.
Go to Toontown.
Yeah, I mean, okay. You could tell what they are. Like a handgun is a handgun,
right?
A sniper rifle is a sniper rifle. A shotgun, you know, they can. You could tell what they are. A rocket launcher is a rocket launcher. But it's kind of, yeah, it's
stylized.
Stylized.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Stylized in a way that, you know, they couldn't be like, hey,
Call of Duty gets like very specific as to what they are. And so it you could go and buy like the gun from Call of Duty and have it. And so, all right.
Yeah. Okay. And it was kind of funny. You guys were talking about like death and respawning, not having any gravity to it. I don't know if you guys have played the new Battlefield games, like Battlefield 1, 2, 3, 4. Anyways, when you play the campaigns of those games, you play as like specific people and you play that person until you die. And when you die, it's not like a, you know, you just instantly respawn. No, it goes like sepia toned. It gives the person's name, when they were born, the day that they died, like all that kind of stuff. And it's like you realize it's like, oh, this wasn't just a character. This was a person that is now dead, and you don't play that character anymore. He's dead, and you jump into the body of somebody else, and you play that character, you know, until that person dies, and it does the whole thing again. Hey, this was the person's name. This is when they were born. This is when they died. All that kind of stuff, and it makes you think about what you're doing while you're playing it. It's not like one of those games like Serious Sam or Duke Nukem where you just, you know, you run around and you spray and pray and all that kind of stuff, without really thinking about it. No, this game is, it's kind of intense because it forces you to realize that it's like, you know, this, you, we're replaying a war, basically World War One, World War Two, you know, that era. And it's like, these were people and these people died, and the actions that you take, well, that made that person die and he is now dead and you cannot be him again. And you have to go play somebody else. And realizing that it's like, hey, what I'm doing in this game is like making people die. And so it's a, it's an interesting way to put gravity into war and killing and shooting people and stuff like that, rather than just games where, you know, infinite respawn. And
yeah, there was a game for the Wii U called Zombie U, which is sort of just like a zombie type of like Walking Dead sort of thing, and zombie simulation. And so there's like a little area, you're in Britain, and you spawn in the safe house, and you have like a radio connection to somebody that's helping you out, like a tactician to tell you where the zombies are or whatnot. And when you spawn, all it tells you, you don't get to choose a character. It just says you can be a male or female. Attributes are sort of randomized, and it just says like first name, and it says like bookkeeper, or like what their job was before the zombie invasion occurred or whatever. And that's all the backstory you have on the character that you're playing, which sets it apart from like a lot of other games where you see all the story, like Link, or, you know, other things where you get like some gravity based on all the backstory they feed you before you play the game, or you read in the little manual or whatever. So then you go off and you have a backpack and you're finding weapons and you're scavenging things, you know, killing zombies or whatever. And for this one instance I was playing, I had played without dying like 60 hours worth in this game. And you're like leveling your skills up and using different weapons, just like a lot of other games. And you're like collecting all this awesome loot and stuff. And the interesting thing about this game, it's not unique. There's other games like it, but it's the first one that I actually played that had a different experience than I was expecting. Your character has permadeath. So if you get overwhelmed by a bunch of zombies and they kill you, your character and your backpack and all the experience you put into that one character is now gone. And so you see your character get, you know, attacked or whatever. You're like, oh man, like that. And it's like, it makes all the situations where you're about to die so much more intense. Cause you're like, okay, I've got all this effort into this one character, 60 hours worth of collecting and scavenging and looting things and being really careful and being super tactical, and something silly happens that you didn't pay attention to, or you get overrun. Like you'll walk into this house and the basement or the floor falls out and you fall into a basement. And your like screen that you normally look at where this guy's helping you, you see like a mini map of stuff. The screen goes and goes out. So then this guy who's been talking to you for the last 50 hours helping you, you don't have him anymore. You pull out like this rickety flashlight and there's like zombies everywhere and stuff. So I ended up dying, and you respawn back at the safe house as George, who was like an iron worker. So you get like completely new character, and then you have an empty backpack is what you start out with. And if you manage to make it all the way back out to BFE and the place where you died, you'll see a zombie walking around with your backpack, the character that you just were. And now it's a zombified version, and you have to like kill your previous character to get your loot back, which I thought was super cool. It was a really neat kind of twist on it. Yeah. And it sort of gave like I had a connection to a character that I didn't, all the backstory is from my own experience in the game, like that I kind of put on top of it, and all the care I put into nurturing this character and stuff. And then it just, I actually felt very disheartened when that character died. I didn't play it for like 2 months. I was like, are you serious? Wow. I was so mad and like distraught over this digital character. So it was interesting. They kind of took a different spin on death in that game, which I recommend trying it if anybody actually plays a Wii U anymore.
Oh, I'm sure they'll re-release it for the Switch and just kind of recycle it, but
probably. Yeah.
Donovan, are we thinking too much about this?
I'm not exactly sure what the lead-in was for that, because the live started kind of mid-sentence, and so
I think that's how this podcast episode will go. It'll be joining a conversation already in progress.
Yeah. That's
it was
how,
pretty much like my 8-year-old wanted to play Fortnite because he heard about it from someone else. And I don't know. And I thought about this yesterday. I'm like, maybe I should ask him to explain what he thinks Fortnite is. Whether or not it's just like a silly, brightly colored cartoon of people dancing or building things, which I didn't know. All I know about Fortnite is a bunch of brightly colored people killing other people and then dancing over top of their dead body. So we could both be horribly wrong. And so I think the point that I wanted to make was I wanted to play it for myself to try to be more educated. And so I could try to narrow down what it is that makes me uncomfortable about my 8-year-old trying to play a game where he gets to kill people and dance over their dead body. Or if I'm looking at this from a completely wrong perspective.
I would be more worried. I mean, this is just me talking personally. I would be more worried about the addictive factor of Fortnite than the violence factor of Fortnite. Because there are, I don't know if you've watched like particular videos on, you know, how Fortnite is run or anything like that, but it's like, it is precisely calculated to be as addictive as possible. And it really is, like,
how so?
Terribly so. Well, the Fort Epic Games uses Amazon Web Service that tracks every player that plays that game, every second that they play it. And all of that data is aggregated to change the game, to modify the game, to make people play, to inspire people to play longer. And so loot boxes and guns and drop boxes and loot llamas and, you know, everything that only makes sense if you play the game. It's there to make the game addicting. How you
dangle
interact
a
with,
carrot in front of you just far enough to make you want to play a little bit more and do the next thing. And
yeah, the dances are a big part of that. The market system that they have set up. They now have skins for the weapons, so you can now skin your weapon. And as you're playing, like if you stop running, your character holds out the weapon and starts to look at it. You know, to admire the skin if you have a skin on it, that kind of thing.
The paint job.
Yeah.
Let me interject just for a second, though. I don't think the addictive factor is a bigger concern than the violence factor. I just think that the addictive factor is the one that will reveal itself before any other effects. I think it's more immediate. Is kind of the difference. The other one is more like a long-term effect, but the addiction factor is going to be more of an immediate one in a lot of gaming right now, whether it is aggregating the data or the loot box systems in games right now. That is a different concern. Yeah.
It's doing like micro purchases and stuff like that in the game where you buy coins or some crap and then you get
their micro transactions. Sure.
Yeah. Micro transactions.
You don't have to do them, but Yeah. They make all their money off that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of it is because it's in the news. But people are very addicted to that game. I mean, back in the day, I remember EverQuest being the big one. That's like people are addicted to EverQuest. You know, and the one kid that spent like 60 hours playing it and died in his chair.
Yeah. Not a new thing, but
Warcraft just happened a lot. And yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. But the thing like that is different now than anything that has been in the past is the data and the fact that aggregating all this data, like in real time and being able to change the game in real time to make people play more is creating an atmosphere in gaming that we've never experienced before.
And the community, because they have events that everybody kind of just sits around and waits for. Thanos was in the game and had a huge event with Thanos.
Remember that.
There's different, you know, things that show up that everybody's kind of waiting to see. So it gets people to come back in and want to see more and more and more. And I think that's kind of what Donovan was talking about too.
Oh yeah. And there's like codes and all this kind of stuff that's hidden in the game that people that are really obsessed with it can go and like decrypt the codes and find messages. And there's like a whole backstory that's like hidden in the world, and it's actually kind of ingenious how they do it. It really is. There's a lot we could talk about in just, you know, just referencing that one game, but I'm the only one that plays it, so it would kind of be a one-sided conversation.
Well, it's learning, because I mean, my son wants he's interested in it, and I don't want to go, no, you can't play that game because it's violent. Like, I want to be able to have an educated opinion about it. And honestly, if it's on the lesser side of who cares, then there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to play it. Like, I played video games with my mom, and it was some of the most fun time that we got to spend together. And the same thing, he and I played Breath of the Wild, and I'm chopping up monsters and stuff. So it's a weird line with trying to be protective and not being a curmudgeon-y hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I can always look in the future, go, this could potentially affect you in this way down the line, or it could just be something silly like a duck hunt. Like,
yeah.
Donovan, have you played the creative mode versus like the battle royale mode in Fortnite?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've played the PvE and the PvP and creative. And
so the creative, are there enemies that spawn after a while, or is it just building for building's sake and that's it?
There's no enemies like you would find in other games. It's other people. And the creative mode is kind of building for building's sake, you know, structures and puzzles and mazes and all this other kind of stuff. But there are other people in the world that there's a half an hour countdown timer, and you can build, you know, whatever you want in that thing. And then when the timer runs out, then you have to go, then the storm comes in and forces everybody in to, you know, try and take each other out. But until that time, you know, you can shoot somebody and, if you want to, they just automatically
respawn. So there's not like a sandbox mode.
Creative is kind of the sandbox mode.
But you're like saying that there's a point where it makes you fight another person. Is there a setting or something where fighting is taken out of the equation?
They've got a brand new one that came out pretty recently. That one I haven't played. I'm not sure what they're calling. I think they might be calling it creative mode. And I don't know. That one I haven't played, but the other ones I've played.
Hey, check it out. We got Bobby Duke in the chat in
Hey-o.
YouTube channel. Nice up, buddy.
Because my son played Minecraft on the tablet when we were traveling, and I just thought it was some silly 8-bit like Lego type building thing, and people were talking about like having a chat on Minecraft. I'm like, who else is in Minecraft? It's just him and like some pig and then like some zombie thing. I never saw another person. And so I had no idea that there were other people that could interact in the thing. What he knew and the limited knowledge I had, because I couldn't teach him about it, was that he just built a crazy treehouse and some stuff all by himself in this weird little Second Life style cubic world.
So like early on, my wife and I tried to adopt a little bit of a philosophy with gaming with our kids, where there had to be a reason for them to play initially, and it's kind of hard to keep up with that. But the idea was, you know, like Minecraft was the first really big game that Mark played, because it was about survival. You could build stuff. There was exploration. You know, eventually I want him to play things like Roller Coaster Tycoon or Civilization. There's a point to a lot of those games, or strategy. I want to try to keep enforcing that for a little while, as long as I can. But then he's playing like Smash Brothers right now. There's no point in Smash Brothers. But I mean, he's playing it. But I won't let him play online. You know, other than maybe talking to friends about it, that's the only social aspect that I'm allowing him to do. Because I won't allow him to play online.
That makes sense.
But even like Mario Odyssey, you know, problem solving, you know, trying to figure things out. I try to think about what are they getting out of the game as a little bit of a marker of, you know, why should I let my kid play this one game?
I mean, that's kind of smart, just because there are so many games out there, and there's so many bad games out there. you know, especially if, you know, in talking with kids, you know, up until the point where they're old enough to, you know, make their own decision and buy their own games and whatnot, it's, you know, you have to be the aggregator of what they consume, whether they like it or not. Like, that's your job. That's what you signed up for.
But I think you should do it responsibly and not turn into just the no police because it's something you don't understand.
I think there has to be purpose to saying no rather than no for no sake. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, a lot of my parents, like, it was no for no sake.
Right.
Because they didn't understand anything about the world and, you know, or for me, it was like Ninja Turtles. Like, I loved Ninja Turtles. My parents hated Ninja Turtles. I could not have anything Ninja Turtles. Like, they found some Ninja Turtle baseball cards in my backpack one time. I got in so much trouble because like, no Ninja Turtles.
Did any of you guys ever hear that the Smurfs were minions of the devil? Because I had a babysitter and I couldn't watch the Smurfs because that woman was convinced that they were minions of the devil and that I was being corrupted by this show. And the, like, Gargamel was Satan, and he spawned these little demons that were walking around. Like
Azrael, wasn't that his cat's name? That's sort of biblical, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the angel of death. And so it was one of those things that, like, did not compute with me and would have never been on the scope of association with those two things if not for this woman making such a huge deal over it. I'm right. Like, I guess Smurfs are the devil. Like, it, I don't see how she's making that point, but whatever.
Don't show her the snorks then. She would lose her mind. What are these tubes used for?
Those dirty perverts of the deep. But, and I'm trying not to walk that weird line of going, like, the tiny, like, eggshell understanding I have of a game must be what the game is about, therefore it's terrible and you can't play it. Like, I don't want to pull a Smurfs thing.
No, nah, man, do your research. If that means you playing the game, then that's your research. If it just means... guess
me playing the game, like, I don't know what in the world I'm doing. So if there's different modes or different campaigns or different whatever, I would have went to the Battle Royale and, like, shot people in the face. I would have never known you could build... I heard some dude build a Millennium Falcon or something in this game out of, like, scrap trash. That seems neat.
Seems like Tim Sway would like that.
Okay, but also don't undermine the fact that we live in a time right now where you can go on YouTube and you can watch everything you need to know about the game. In a sense, you can watch people actually playing it. If you don't want to actually play it, you could actually watch somebody go through it.
I think you sign up for your AARP card whenever you watch one of those videos. Like, what is Timmy talking about with the fork knife? And you type it into YouTube. If I was putting keywords on my...
Donovan?
Ooh, that's a good question.
No.
No? You can't lock a server down so, like, just us four could play?
Well, I mean, if you go... you can do...
Like a private match?
Well, okay. That's kind of true, but kind of not. You can do squads where it's just four of you playing within a creative mode, but there could be other squads. So yes and no.
Demon death squads. Raping and pillaging.
Smurf squads. Yeah, no. That's funny. Smurfs of the devil. No.
All right, so I got to play Fortnite. Are there any... Okay, so Battlefield, like, I remember playing Battlefield a long time ago.
Probably 1942.
Yeah, like, I kind of want Deacon to play Battlefield and not play Fortnite. Like, that seems like you talk about there being a point. And then there's also this part of me, it's like, not everything has to be a stinking teaching moment. Sometimes things are fun because they're fun. Because Ninja Turtles like to eat silly crap on their pizza just because it's silly. And not to think too much about it. And just let
in that case, play rules. Worms Armageddon. That's all you need.
Play what? There.
Worms Armageddon.
That's I'm going to make Mark play Secret of Monkey Island.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
The old
click games. I'm doing a Secret of Monkey Island project right now, actually. That's such a good game. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff out there. Enough that it could, like, you can point your kids in the direction of the stuff that you know is good and classic and funny and memorable rather than, you know, what's popular right now. Like Fortnite, or there's actually this other one that came out, that just came out that apparently is, like, way better than Fortnite, and I can't remember the name of it. Mercy? Envy? It's like a four-letter... It's like a four-letter word that ends with a Y.
There's a bunch of clones out right now of the Victory Royale, not Victory Royale, Battle Royale modes. So there's a ton of them right now.
To be fair, Fortnite was a clone of it.
Yeah.
And they copied it from other games that already had it. They're just taking what's popular and building on it. which is not a novel idea. It's just they were doing a good job at it.
Yeah, because the first one I played was actually called PlayerUnknown's Battleground, or more commonly PUBG. PUBG. And I played it, and I played it like twice, and I thought it was okay. And I stopped playing because I just didn't like the control. It was interesting, but yeah, it wasn't for me at the time.
Yep.
We should set up some curmudgeon-y old geek gamer nights or something. Have a bunch of people, like listeners, and us play random games.
Have one of those stream and just make fun of it. And
it'd be kind of fun, actually.
We should like, troll the teenagers.
Like when Bob and I play Fortnite, like we could, I don't know, stream it somehow and just get mad at it because we don't know what in the world we're doing and we're the old men.
Like the Conan O'Brien playing games.
You should like artificially gray your hair and put on glasses.
Real close to the TV.
Which one am I? Why am I always jumping?
It'd be like Jimmy DeResta playing Fortnite.
Or like Jim Halpert playing Call of Duty when he goes to the other office.
Oh, yeah, and he's like running into the walls and grenading himself.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Like, I work in IT, and I've only had two jobs. One was at one oil company, and then my current one. But the place that I used to work at, they had a bunch of IT people, and they were the most antisocial IT people, which is kind of funny because of how stereotypical it was, except for the fact that they were all jocks. They were all jocks that worked in IT. Wow. I didn't fit in because I was a geek working in IT, but they loved Unreal. And so they set up this private server within the company server that only the IT people had access to. And so literally all day, every day, they would just play Quake. They would just have a game constantly running and people would jump in and jump out. And it was funny. They would just play Quake. That's what they would do. On company time.
So what have you guys been working on since we started kind of talking and missed that whole part?
Who wants to go first? I'll go. I was experimenting with painting 3D prints. And yeah, I've seen the way that a lot of people finish them online with, you know, the crack filler and then the coats of primer. But I want to see how they took paint, like like acrylic Liquitex paint, and it worked pretty good for the most part. Just doing some more experiments and seeing if the results are actually good enough to sell, and the results are not yet. part is my paint job, and part of it is some of the print quality of the things that I was printing weren't quite there yet. Although I did sell some bookmarks that I made or 3D printed that were Harry Potter themed. So
they're looking better than when you first started.
Yeah, I figured out some things with the printer and modified some of the settings, but I'm loving it. Still having a lot of fun doing it.
I got my printer finally working, so I know that feeling. I've got the Prusa i3 Mark II, the one that Bob put together in the video, and then he crashed the hot end into the bed and it never worked again. So I had to replace the bed, and it worked really well, and then it just started sucking. So I flashed the firmware, finally, because it hadn't been updated since Bob got it, since it was released back when. And now it prints like a dream. It's awesome. I can have a printer again in my house. And then the army of them at work. So yeah, it's getting the 3D prints dialed in is pretty nice.
That's cool. Well, I got my my Breath of the Wild shop aprons done. I need to make a harness for one of them tonight after we're done talking. And so hopefully I'll have the video for that up tomorrow. And then I found a tattoo artist to do my Marauder's Map boots.
Nice.
So that's going to be coming up. I've also got my Miles Morales headphone stands that I'm working on, and Josh turned me on to Fusion, and I haven't been able to stop making things in Fusion, which is awesomely terrible.
It pleases me to no end that it's like I took something from my mind, gave it to Josh, and he bestowed it upon you. So it's sort of like a lineage of 3D modeling. It's cool.
Yeah, I made a scoop.
Like Lady Windy.
I made a wrench. I just finished doing the template for my workbench. There's a lot of like alterations and stuff that I need to do and mechanisms to make it turnable and expandable and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to, I don't know how long it's going to take me to do that, but I've got that going. And then I also finished the introduction and the first chapter of my book. I got my project nice. List laid out for that. And so I need to start taking pictures and all that kind of good stuff.
I've been working on the voiceover. I did it before you hopped on today, and I have one I thought was pretty good, but it was really echoey. So I've got to say it into like a blanket to try to cut that down.
What about you, Wes? I saw your Nintendo.
You saw the little teaser?
Yeah. That was fantastic.
I was on the fence to whether I wanted to post that or not, but yeah, I am probably 98% done with my NES project. For those of you that have been keeping up, I haven't really divulged all the parts of it, but I'll say it now. So I've got an original NES that I was not able to repair, so it wasn't one that was fully functioning first. I wanted to make sure of that. I gutted it. I put in lithium-ion battery pack that I built myself. I added a portable projector, HDMI projector, inside. So I cut a hole in the back of the NES so it projects out the rear of it. I put a NES Classic Edition console, the newer one that just came out a couple years ago. And so it's an NES Classic inside of original NES. So there's a little Inception thing going on here. And I have two wireless controllers that stow in the cartridge slot. Mm-hmm. And they have inductive charging pads built into the cartridge slots. And I hid the receiving ends of the inductive chargers inside the controller, so you can't tell from the controller that there's a charger in it.
That's awesome.
Externally of the NES, you can't tell there's anything different until you flip it open or pull the little hidden hatch in the back for the projector. I've got a kickstand that kind of angles it up a little bit higher in the back to shoot it higher on the wall. I'm modifying a Mario Paint mouse pad. It's a reversible modification. It's just something I'm taping at the bottom. I've got another inductive charger set that's a little bit higher amperage. So basically you take your NES, which is completely battery powered. You can walk anywhere with it and play.
That's so good.
You set it down on the mouse pad, which is the same footprint as the NES, and it auto charges. You don't have to plug anything in. And
that is amazing.
I also wired a green LED so that where the red LED normally is, it'll turn green when it's charging only on the base. And when you pick it up, that goes off. And I got the power button linked up. So when you hit the power button on the original NES, it turns the whole battery pack on, which turns on the Nintendo inside. And the only thing I have left to do is make it so the reset button physically presses the reset button on the classic console, because that actually goes to the main menu to allow you to choose the next game. So there's like 30 some games on the classic NES. So that's how you get back to choose something else. And there's some other odds and ends. I'm pretty much done. I'm just working on the video. I've got like 90 clips. I'm having to sort through to see what I don't need and need. I've been OBS recording just like a top-down view of me working at my workbench. So I've got some work to do on the video, but I still got other things I could add to the project, maybe for version 2, but it's been a lot of fun. I'm glad that I was able to take this idea and kind of make something cool out of it.
I hope it gets a million views.
When are you going to sell them? Because you know you're going to get inundated.
I was just going to say, people are going to want to buy that.
I want to buy one right now.
So do I.
How much would you? Well, see, this thing. So the projector is a $15 clearance projector that I just bought four of one day, just because they're $15.
One, two, three, four.
They're not the greatest resolution. All right, so I would need to upgrade that before I would want to sell it to somebody else.
It's battery operated. I think you have to have some kind of expectation of what you're getting into. I can take that thing and I can set it right over there on that wall. And I can play whatever I want to play.
Maybe I could have two versions, a prototype version with a cheaper projector, and then a higher-end one where I really soup it up, have like an audio output jack, have like volume controls. Oh, the little projector has a built-in speaker as well. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah.
but I've damaged it to the point where I can't control the volume. I broke some traces off the projector because I had to go in and solder in there to be able to control the buttons, the physical buttons, to relocate them, and they fell off. But I can just use one of my other three and fix it, I guess. Replace it.
So here's the question. I'm going to skip ahead a couple steps.
Please.
When is the Super SNES Classic coming out now?
If it would fit, I would do it. I'll try it.
I don't know if that fit.
It might be too tall.
Fake it.
You just put a Raspberry Pi in it and have the same functionality, right?
Well, see, that's the thing. I know a lot of people are going to be like, why don't you just put a Raspberry Pi in there? And I'll say, I've already put a Raspberry Pi in something and put games on it. I've been there and done that. The idea of having like a console and a console, like this was the Russian stacking doll kind of idea. Is
well, now
the
you need novelty. To put a full-size NES in something that's bigger than an NES.
Like an NES cabinet or something. Like
put put it inside an old tube TV.
Right. Challenge accepted. I've got some other ideas.
I'll put it inside an Atari 2600.
You could put it inside your Element.
There you go. I was thinking of taking it to a brewery and like just having people play it, like projecting on the side of the building. See what.
How big can that that projection screen get?
I was playing it on my garage door in my outside my house.
Wow.
Last night. Now, granted, it's not like the best like lumen rating for this projector. It's small,
so it's got to be dark.
It's got to be pretty dark unless you're really close to the projected surface. And the wider the surface, the better. Mm-hmm. It's more vibrant. Pretty good for $15. I'm just gonna say it's pretty awesome. Yeah. So it's doable.
I want one.
I spent too long talking about that, but that's cool. It was fun.
No, it's good to hear.
The mystery is revealed.
So we've heard what we're working on. What are we geeking out about?
We bought tickets today to go see the Lego Movie 2, the second part. And so my son and I have been playing the Lego Movie game on the Xbox and went back and watched the first Lego Movie. So we've been geeking out about Legos and the Lego Movie.
We did that. We rewatched the Lego Movie because I thought it was coming out last weekend when my wife was gone.
Well, the special screening did. But it was only one day, one time. That's it.
When is it officially out? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Oh.
I never realized that.
All right.
Cool. I'm geeking out about a trip I went on yesterday. I took a bunch of students on a field trip to the local community college, the same one that I went to when I was studying animation, and took them on a tour through, or the college took them on a tour through all the animation classes. They have game design classes. They're doing virtual reality stuff there now. And strangely enough, that's not what I was geeking out about, because all those classrooms look kind of the same. They have all the toys, all the computers. But they also did a tour through the theater department talking about stagecraft, and got a tour of the shop that's used to build all the props for the plays and stuff. And that's what I was geeking out about. I felt more at home there in that shop than I did in any of the classrooms around any of the computers. You know, I'm sitting there looking at, you know, the full outfeed table saw, the full welding area. And it was a huge room. It's almost a two-story room because they use the upper areas for storage. And then you have these huge Jurassic Park-looking doors that open up into the stage so they can take out the props and put them out on the stage. And I fell in love with that area. I don't care. You know what? Forget about animation. Just let me work in here, and I'll be completely happy. I felt so at home in there.
That's cool.
Let's see. I'm geeking out. I've got my second meeting on Monday with the local maker meetup group that I kind of resurrected that I talked about a couple weeks ago. I've been trying to get some other creative people that I know in the area that are like in the game industry, and some like an art professor that I had at one of the schools I went to, and not specifically like maker group that we're a part of. Like, I want to sort of reach a little bit beyond that and try to get more like traditional art in there, and sculptory kind of stuff, and kind of stir the pot with more creative people and see what comes out of it. So
Mixed Media Maker Group.
Yeah, why not? That'd be pretty awesome, I think. So I'm looking forward to that. Last time, I think we had 14 people. I think we're on track to have at least that many.
Nice.
And we got a nice place reserved that's only like 1 mile from my house. So versus convenient. Like 30 minutes away. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, there's a maker group that's here in the area called 918 Makers that they meet periodically, but it's always so far away. I never have the ambition to like go to it. It's terrible.
Gotta go at least once.
I've been a couple times.
Oh, okay.
But it's like I live so far out.
Do you?
I live so far out of town that it's like it's an hour at least to get anywhere. So
wow.
It's hard to find that motivation to, you know, add, because I work 10 to 11 hours a day plus an hour there and an hour back. So I'm gone 12 to 13 hours a day. And like it's hard to get home after that and then be like, oh, I need to turn around and leave again.
Right.
Because I need to go to a maker meeting. So.
I'm geeking out about Bob's bathroom. Sounds really silly. But we're finally finished with all of our Lowe's projects. The master bathroom, the second part with all the fancy pretty parts, was put out today. That project was massive and all-encompassing and got in the way of just about everything else. And it is done.
Yeah, so when I checked it a couple hours ago, I think it had like 115,000 views so far just from this morning.
Cool.
So it's doing well.
I hope it does really well. But I have to do a bunch of social media stuff for Lowe's, and like I'm kind of glad that we're wrapping up with that right now, because, and it kind of sucks because there's some stuff that I forgot to kind of trickle along the way that I have to maybe do at the end, and it's going to seem way more like an overt commercial push because I should have done it earlier. But yeah, I'll be very glad. We're already on the next project. We're already about halfway through with the next thing. And so it's funny. It's like, oh man, that thing is done. It's like, all right, well, and you like, you wipe your face and you're like, let's do the next one now. But that was a big, big project, and I'm glad it's over with.
Sweet. Yeah. Look good.
Thank you.
Well, we'd love to hear from all of you. Go ahead and check out the website, makinggeeks.com. And on the contact page, that is where you can ask us any questions or provide any suggestions for the show. And on the homepage of the site, you can listen to all of our past episodes right there on makinggeeks.com.
If you want to find us on social media, the Making Geeks podcast is on Twitter, on Instagram, although we don't ever post to it, here on YouTube. If you want to find us specifically, Sean can be found at Geek Builders. Wes is found at Geek Smithing, not to confuse the two. Josh is found over at the PI Workshop for his personal stuff or the work that he does with Bob over at I Like to Make Stuff. And my stuff can be found on Instagram at Once Upon a Workbench.
And we'd like to take this opportunity to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks. Including our top patron, Mr. Clinton from C3D Prop Shop. Thanks for your support. And also, we have a new patron from Southern Style DIY. Thanks for jumping on board, buddy. We appreciate
it. Heyo!
I like his stuff.
Yes, very much. If you'd like to be added to this list of elite supporters, head over to patreon.com/makinggeeks. We appreciate it.
We'd like to thank everybody for hanging out with us. I know that this started off kind of in the middle of a conversation. Thank you for everybody in the YouTube chat that came along with us and added their input. If you want to be part of that, it's every Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube. You can search Making Geeks and you'll find it. But I would really like some more input on this, as I still don't know what to do. So if you have experienced this, when you have young kids and introducing them into some, you know, into the world of video games and things that are not Dora the Explorer and, you know, Cleo and Kukin or whatever that show is now that my daughter likes to watch. Like, they're becoming younger people. So help me with, through your experiences, know what to expect when raising kids that are not tiny people. But if you want to listen to this only, it's released every Saturday on your local podcast player. And we'd like to thank you all for hanging out with us, and we hope you have a fantastic week.
See ya.
See ya.
Have a good weekend.
D-Way, what the hell are you downloading all that damn Fortnite for?